Human Information Processing and Reaction Time by Richard W. Pugh. This report was supported by the Air Force Office of Scientific Research. Two 500-knot aircraft on a head-on collision course are closing at a rate of nearly 1,500 feet per second. It has been estimated that it will take a pilot 1 to 2 seconds or more than half a mile before he can even initiate an evasive action. It is recommended that an automobile driver follow a lead car by at least 2 seconds in order to compensate for his reaction time. A large city post office sorts over 1 million letters a day. A saving of only 27 milliseconds of manual sorting time per letter would save 8 man-hours per day. From the time a fast ball leaves a baseball pitcher's hand, the batter has only 400 milliseconds in which to organize and execute his swing. Numbers such as these point up the importance of considering the constraints imposed by human operators' performance capacities and limitations in systems design. The constraint of information processing time or reaction time is perhaps the topic of practical importance within human performance about which the most is known, and yet it is still not always possible to predict in advance the response time to any but the simplest of environmental events. The discussion that follows will focus on those aspects of human response time research and theory that seem particularly relevant for systems design. It would be nice to be able to describe in detail the neural pathway delays, beginning with the photochemical change in the eye or hair cell activity in the ear, and terminating with the muscle contraction in the finger. Many attempts have been made to do just that. Unfortunately, only 30 to 50 milliseconds of a response time that is rarely less than 150 milliseconds can be accounted for in terms of measurable component transmission times. The remainder, what we call central processing time, represents the heart of the process and is accessible to study largely through inferences relating independent variables under our control to overall response time. Consider the simplest case. An observer sees a warning signal indicating that from 1 to 2 seconds later, a light will occur to which he should respond as rapidly as possible by pressing a simple key. If the light is bright enough to be easily visible against the background, if it projects within his fovea, the central sensitive region of his retina, and if the light is white, then his mean response time over a series of trials will be approximately 180 milliseconds. The standard deviation of the response time distribution will be 15 to 20 milliseconds, and the distribution will be slightly skewed, having a tail that extends toward longer times. These are relatively optimal conditions, and any deviation from them will cause longer mean response times and larger standard deviations. An equivalent auditory experiment using a clearly audible click as the stimulus will produce a mean reaction time of approximately 160 milliseconds and comparable distributions. Tactile response time likewise depends on the place stimulated, but under optimal conditions may have a mean as fast as 170 milliseconds. The choice of a simple, easily produced response is important to these conditions. Movement of the finger, the eye, or the tongue provides the fastest response times, while in the case of the arm, foot, or head, it takes more time to mobilize the inertias involved. The use of a warning signal prior to the event requiring a response is also important to these optimal conditions, regardless of sensory modality or response member. If the observer is unalerted, as in one experiment in which secretaries responded to lights on the average of once every 2.5 days, you can expect to add at least 100 milliseconds to the average response time. Unfortunately, very few practical tasks require a response under such idealized, simple conditions. For example, the time to touch the brake pedal in an automobile in response to a brake light on a car ahead is estimated to be about 700 milliseconds. This, of course, includes some movement time from accelerator to brake. As in the case of this example, the situation is usually more complex, but a more crucial complication is that most responses to environmental events result from more complex information handling than a simple response to a simple stimulus. Consider next some of the dimensions along which this complexity varies. Response time depends on the average amount of information transmitted by the response. One of the most consistent findings has been the proportional relation between reaction time and information, using the term in its technical sense of uncertainty reduction. If an observer is choosing among a set of equally likely signals, then the response time is a linear function of the logarithm to the base 2 of the number of possible signals up to some reasonable limit, like 10 to 15 signals. If the alternatives are not equally likely, or if the sequence of signals is probabilistically constrained, then Shannon's formula for computing entropy in the discrete noiseless channel case is appropriate. The paperback book referenced later, entitled Human Performance by Fitz and Posner, has a discussion of these formulas, their application, and generalization to the case of noisy transmission. The linearity between information or entropy, expressed in bits on the one hand, and reaction time on the other, provides a convenient way to express the processing capacity of a particular man-machine system. We take the ratio of information to reaction time as the processing rate in bits per second. In these terms, man-machine processing rates are typically rather slow, of the order of 4 to 8 bits per second. They also vary substantially from task to task, so that it is not very meaningful to interpret these values in any absolute sense. Human performance comparisons can be made only within the context of a particular system. In concrete terms, a processing rate of 6 bits per second means that the reaction time difference between 2 and 8 equally likely alternatives would be approximately 3/10 of a second. Every doubling of the number of alternatives adds about 160 milliseconds to the response time. Response time depends on the ease with which the one signal can be distinguished from the other possible signals. It is faster to respond to red when it is picked from among red, green, and yellow than from among red, red, orange, and orange. Similarly, highway signs that differ in shape as well as message may be distinguished more rapidly than those varying in verbal message alone. This dimension of signal discriminability or similarity is an important determiner of response time and acts multiplicatively with the effect of information load. That is, reduced discriminability decreases the signal processing rate rather than simply shifting the intercept of the function relating response time to information load. With both the information principle and the discrimination principle, it is important to emphasize that response time depends as much on what could have happened and didn't as on the signal that actually occurred. In conceptual terms, response time seems to depend as much on what the observer expects to happen and the range of things he expects as on the actual events that transpire. It is useful to think of an active observer continually modifying his view of the environment, rather than of a passive telephone switchboard. Response time is intimately linked to the accuracy with which an observer can perform. If one examines the performance of a group of typists, key punch operators, or specialists at other similar information processing activities, one finds a high positive correlation between speed and accuracy of performance. Those that are fast tend to be more accurate, and vice versa. Similarly, practice tends to improve both the speed and accuracy of performance together within any single individual, and the increments due to practice continue to accumulate over very long periods of time. However, for a given individual, at a given point in practice, if there is pressure to perform rapidly, it will be at the cost of reduced accuracy, and conversely, high accuracy can be produced only with concomitant reductions in speed. Laboratory evidence suggests that this speed-accuracy relationship is very orderly and that logarithmic changes in the ratio of correct to erroneous responses are associated with linear increments in response time. For example, in a 15-signal, 15-response task, a shift from 50% to 90% accuracy may require an additional 100 milliseconds. However, the factors influencing the size of these increments are not well understood at present. In a qualitative way, a useful integrative conception of human information processing relates processing time to the depth of processing required. Thus, raw physical changes in stimulation are coded faster than symbolic information, and symbolic or pictorial information is typically dealt with faster than semantic or verbal information, so long as the symbology is well learned and easily understood. In a parallel way, depth of processing reflects the trade between speed and accuracy of performance. It takes greater depth and hence more time to achieve higher levels of accuracy. Several theoretical representations reflecting this concept of depth of processing have been developed. Most of them postulate that the observer samples environmental information and accumulates evidence over time about which of the possible responses is appropriate. Eventually, some criterion is reached that causes the sampling to terminate and a response to be chosen. One relatively simple model reflecting this conception is based on Bayesian decision theory. It is described qualitatively in Fitz and Posner and quantitatively in Edwards' paper on optional stopping models, referenced at the end of this report. This model gives a reasonable account of the relations among several of the variables discussed here, but should not be regarded as the final word on prediction of reaction times. Our knowledge is growing too fast for that. Response time depends on the correspondence between input and output codes. It is not only the nature of the input and output codes that matters, but also the relationship between the two. There are three bases for determining what code relationships are most natural and compatible. First, it is easy to understand that introducing extra code translation steps between input and output reduces the compatibility and increases response time. For example, if a number is displayed in decimal notation and must be reported in binary notation, the code translation process will take time. Second, geometry plays a role in what is natural and compatible. If an operator is using a vertical cathode ray tube computer display with a horizontal input tablet, it is geometrically compatible to have movements of the stylus away from the body associated with upward movements on the display. Third, what is natural in the relationship between input and output or display and control may depend on the accumulated experience of the user. In the United States, light switches and power switches usually associate up with on and down with off. But on the continent and in most other foreign countries, the converse is the cultural rule. Use of a design inappropriate to the cultural or otherwise habitual response patterns will both increase response times and produce higher probability of error. This kind of conflict has led to some serious problems in standardizing controls for international use. Just as in the case of discriminability described earlier, these effects of compatibility act multiplicatively with information load. Increased compatibility increases the processing rate rather than simply shifting the total time taken to respond. It is important to note that in many cases the effects of incompatibility can be offset by sufficient practice on the code transformation task. Many designers use this argument to support use of incompatible code relations. However, it has been repeatedly found that compensatory training of this sort works satisfactorily when the operator is carrying a normal workload, but breaks down in periods of overload or environmentally induced stress. The probability of an incorrect response under stress is much higher in an incompatible design than in a compatible one. These, then, are some of the signal processing factors that influence the speed of reaction. Sensory modality and other factors having to do with signal detectability, signal predictability, information transmitted, discriminability from other possible signals, relative emphasis on speed versus accuracy, and input-output code correspondence. There are, of course, many other situational factors that need to be considered, including age, sex, and handedness of the operator, environmental factors, and even the time of day, but these are beyond the scope of this brief survey. As you can see, our attempt to report on the speed of human information processing involves us in many aspects of performance not normally associated with reaction time. In fact, more and more frequently, reaction time measures are being used to infer the kinds of processing operations that are taking place within an observer. Besides providing the kind of practical data that may be useful to systems designers who must deal with the time constraints imposed by human operators, response time measures provide a reliability and precision that can be very helpful in the analysis of the human information processing system. References for this report. P. M. Fitz, F-I-T-T-S, and M. I. Posner, Human Performance. Belmont, California, published by Brooks Cole Publishing Company. This paperback should be the starting point for anyone interested in pursuing the substance of this report in greater detail. P. M. Fitz article, Perceptual Motor Skill Learning, in A. W. Melton's edited book, Categories of Human Learning, published New York by Academic Press, 1964. This chapter specializes some of the topics in Fitz and Posner and discusses some further issues not covered there. You Nicer, N-E-I-S-S-E-R, Cognitive Psychology, published New York by Appleton Century Crofts, 1967. Nicer, who is a broad theorist, surveys much of what is new and interesting in the analysis of man as an information processing system. His perspective is different from that presented here. A.T. Welford, Fundamentals of Skill, published in London by Methuen, 1968. An encyclopedic account of research on human skilled performance, having an excellent bibliography of its own. And finally, W. Edwards, Optimal Strategies for Seeking Information, Models for Statistics, Reaction Times, and Human Information Processing, published in the Journal of Mathematical Psychology, Volume 2, 1965, pages 312 to 329. This is a detailed mathematical derivation of a model for reaction time performance based on statistical decision theory. Date. Dial Access Technical Education is an IEEE continuing education activity. If you would like a copy of the bibliography for this paper, please send a stamped self-addressed envelope with your name and the title of this talk to Date, IEEE 345 East 47th Street, New York 10017.